We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
My name is Jari Bolander. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. On this podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the traits, values, beliefs, and skills of all sorts of entrepreneurs to learn how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world. Let's get started.
Hey everyone, stay tuned to the end of the interview where I'll give you some actionable insights that I learned from my guest. These insights are also in the show notes. As always, thanks for listening. Now, on to my guest for today, Dan Emery, founder of the New York City Guitar School, who talks about the challenges of pivoting in COVID. That was a tough one, huh? In early 2020, the New York City Guitar School was going strong with 5 physical locations and thousands of students. Dan and his team were starting to explore possibilities in online learning. When COVID hit and shut down in-person classes, the school had to go fully virtual. It wasn't easy, but Dan was prepared. He put aside emergency savings and already was onboarding teachers into virtual platforms before the city went into lockdown. They did have to lay off office staff and close locations, but now they teach students all over the world, and he sees online learning as a core aspect of their offerings. With a master's in teaching from Columbia, Dan has developed a unique methodology to teaching students how to play music, encouraging his teachers to help students find their sweet spot, that place where they are challenged but can also achieve mastery and move on to harder lessons. Raised in Idaho on a farm, he also loves the way music connects people from different backgrounds and builds community. Now, let's get better together. Dan Emery, welcome to the podcast.
Jari, thank you. It is awesome to be here. I'm super fired up to talk to you, and I appreciate you having me on.
Well, you know, I was a little bit hesitant, to be honest, and it's not because of you and what you're doing at NYC Guitar School and all the awesome stuff you do. I was a little hesitant because I really want to learn how to play the guitar, and I know having you on is going to like put me in this awkward position because you're an expert on how to teach people how to play the guitar. I mean, you're coming out with this new book, 40 Songs to Practice on Guitar. You have this New York City Guitar School. But more importantly, you have had such an interesting story about how you had to pivot during COVID. And we are going to examine all that because I think that's just a masterclass in how to handle these sort of things, to be honest. But before we dig into that and I try to figure out how I'm going to handle this, well, Jari, when you're going to start learning guitar, why don't you tell us how you got to do what you're doing today?
Absolutely. I will tell you that. First, let me say, though, that you are not alone. Lots of people want to play guitar. Lots of people feel bad that they tried and they we wouldn't have a business if it wasn't for people who wanted to play guitar and felt like they ran into roadblocks. So, how did I get to? So a year ago, I was the founder and CEO of New York City Guitar School with a couple thousand students in five physical locations in New York City. And it was awesome. Our students were awesome. Our teachers were awesome. We were having a great time. And today I'm the founder and CEO of New York City Guitar School, a totally, almost totally virtual school with over 1,000 students in 31 states and nations around the world. Wow. So the story of how we got from there to here in a year, I think is a pretty exciting story. I'm excited to share it with you because I think there's some nuggets in there for your entrepreneur listeners that will apply to their businesses no matter what's going on.
Oh yeah. I mean, I've talked with a lot of entrepreneurs that have had the whole physical completely get shut down and struggle mightily on going virtual. And I think what's interesting about what you guys do, cause you know, again, like any skill you want to learn, like if you're a dancer or a gymnast or, you know, CrossFitter or whatever, where the instruction's always going to be better when it's like one-on-one. You know, how I always like to say before we start recording, it's like, hey, if we're having, you know, imagine we're having a cup of coffee, but we're over Zoom. There's nothing that can replace that, yet you had to. So how did you do that? I think is the best way I could put that.
So first of all, I want to just point out a couple of really important things. One is COVID. It was almost like the angel of death passing over, right? And some people had the right thing on their over their door, and some people didn't. So for example, my friends who run jujitsu studios or swimming studios or restaurants, man, that was like one whole thing. My friends who run like remote IT, that was a whole other thing. So even though there were things that we did right and things that we were prepared for, there was just a big element of randomness to this. So I just want to get that right out in front to say, man, depending on what you were doing and where you were sitting and what your situation was, the effects of hitting of COVID were very different. For us, we had something that could pivot to online. But that said, it was a little tricky. We had our five physical locations and our goal, one of our goals for the year actually had been, we wanted to move in an online direction. We had a goal in the year 2020, we will run 10 experimental online somethings, right? Online something. So in my mind, it was like, it could be a one-on-one lesson that would count as one of the 10 things. And then in a period of about a week, we went from thousands of in-person guitar experiences to zero. So we had a couple really important things going for us. Number one, we had no debt. We had a cash emergency fund in our business, and I had a personal cash emergency fund. Now, I had the experience of looking at this cash, thinking, "Why am I stacking this cash up? Am I dumb? Why am I not putting this to?" I had no idea how fast that cash in the emergency fund goes out when there's a true emergency, when you have no income coming in, you've got payroll, you've got rent on five locations, so, but that really helped. The next thing that really helped is our students. We had a lot of goodwill with our students. They really wanted us to succeed and they trusted us. And because of that, they were ready to change some things. They were ready to try some new things out. But I think probably the most important thing that helped us change quickly is that we have a business that has we have a mission statement that we talk about a lot and we live it and we believe it. It's coaching personal greatness, one lesson at a time. And then we have some values underneath that. And we talk about them all the time and we live them and we believe them. And that helped us all be together. And then also we have meeting rhythms that we run. We run something called Scrum, which in San Francisco, I know you guys know all about Scrum. Like every IT company is running Scrum, every software company. Let me tell you, there are not very many music schools that run Scrum, but we do. And we had for a couple of years. And, so the meeting rhythms and that we had in place and the project management we had in place, we pivoted, a couple weeks before lockdown, we took that Scrum team that was supposed to come up with these 10 experimental, and we're like, hey, guess what? This Scrum team has a new mission. It's to get everything online as quickly as possible. So we had, before lockdown happened, we had all our teachers trained on Zoom. We had 50 Zoom accounts. We had sent out to all our students that we would make this change. And it was still a total train wreck. But we had a shot. Because of this, we had a shot. Yeah, yeah. So that's and just one more thing before I kind of finish off the very beginnings of the experience for us is that even though we had an emergency fund, even though we had this great team, I looked at cash. I looked at what was happening, and because our revenues dropped to zero. And we're like, we don't do semester plans or commitments. You know, that's part of our student friendly thing. We had only pay as you go plans essentially. So people weren't coming. Therefore there was no money coming in. And even with our emergency fund, I was like, oh my gosh, we're going to be out of business in 6 weeks. We're going to be bankrupt in 6 weeks. So we knew, so we had to lay people off, and it was brutal. It was brutal because we had a tight team, but we did it immediately. We did it before the lockdown even went in place. And the advice I got was, don't try to mess around with this. Don't like cut one person and then cut another person, then cut another person. Like, you got to rip the Band-Aid off, make sure you survive. And that'll put you in a position where you're not killing the morale of your team by having multiple layers of cuts, but you're gonna, but maybe you're even in a chance to bring people back. So what we did is we kept every single teacher. We did not lay off a single teacher through this. But we did lay off some of our desk staff. I went to half, me and my partner cut our salaries for a while. Other people went half time, and some of the people we laid off, we were able to bring back some people to full time later and bring back a little bit of that staff. But man, that was brutal. But we did it fast.
Whoa, I have been through those before, and they are never fun. It is emotional, yet you, like you said, you got to rip the Band-Aid off. And there's no other good way to put it. And it's one of the most awful things you can do, because I don't know about you, but I know when I had to lay people off, I always felt like I let them down, you know, like, gosh, I'm the boss. I'm supposed to have my shit together. And I don't. And, you know, this was back, the first time I ever did this was back in 2000, 2001. Where global economic meltdown, you know, like it's not even my fault and I still can't do it the right way, you know?
Well, we were able to give every, because we did it so fast, we were able to give some severance. We were able to give a little bit of runway, but you know, at the end of the day, it was brutal. Really, really tough for those people involved. And then over the next, we ended up closing three of our five locations. So the first one, that was really tough too, because we're like, oh my gosh, this is people, because it's a spiritual home for people.
Yeah.
It's, and we're like, hey, your spiritual home is going to disappear for the students, for the teachers. But the third one we closed, by that time it had gotten pretty easy and it was no longer a shock to the system. Everybody knew what we were doing, but we were immediately advancing as well. We were immediately, making this alternate structure. So we gave lots of off ramps for our students that were uncomfortable and the group classes got, you know, we lost, I think around 98% of our revenue, there. Our rock bands, of course, completely disappeared, but at first our private lessons, our students gave us a chance and they, you know, the first week, I think, you know, maybe like 80 people took lessons. I mean, everybody was in shock. But then gradually people started coming back and we realized that we were doing something super, super important, because that thing that we had given before, I mean, music and human connection, all of a sudden these lessons that we were teaching became incredibly important. It was a point of sanity. It was a point of continuity for our students. It was a point of human connection. And I think our whole team realized very quickly that we had a really important service to deliver to people.
Yeah, it's normalcy too. Like a little bit of something to look forward to, a little bit of hope, you know, a little bit of fun. I mean, you know, my fiance Minerva, she take singing lessons, and same thing. The place she would take it was in person. COVID hits, lockdown, everything's done. They also pivoted to online. There's a bunch of nonprofits that would do, like one I've been involved with before. They had in-person mentoring for students to learn how to write.
Mm-hmm.
And COVID hits, no more school. They had to pivot online too. Not ideal. And I think you're right. I mean, the big point you had, which I'm glad you brought up and you thought, and like you said, was that we had a way to go online. We can deliver our services online. Not ideal. I'm with you, right? I think that your whole comment about the spiritual home and, you know, like I do jujitsu too. There's just something about walking in the dojo.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm ready and you feel it. The energy is there. You can't replace that. I mean, I take jujitsu classes over Zoom and my friends, you know, we turn it on in my friend's garage. It's great. We have that. It's awesome that we're our grapple. They call it grapple in place. But we're our grapple in place buddies. But nothing can compare to that home of where I do the work and I feel that sense of community. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because I think that's missing. We're struggling with community. And so how have you guys tried to not only contain your community and like foster, but how are you building more community? How is it working out for you?
Yeah, we are. First of all, we were rolling out a new product or a new class or something like that every couple of weeks. And so many of them went down in flames. I remember I was like, okay, there's gotta be all these homeschooled kids, you know, and we're going to do these Zoom camps. And like, we put together the curriculum, lined up the teachers, did a big marketing push. And, you know, we worked so hard and then, you know, you send out the email and you're like, okay, what's going to happen? And and one kid signed up.
Yeah,
and I was crying because I was like, oh my gosh, somebody wants this. But it was like the only kid. So we were running, we were like, if we build it, they will come. We were running empty classes, getting our teachers paid. So it was really, there was a lot of experimentation, and we're still experimenting a little, but this is where we kind of ended up. Because one other thing going on is we're in New York City. Our lessons are expensive. We're positioned as the premium lesson provider in a very expensive city. And now we're on the internet, right? And on the internet, the price wants to go to zero. That's the way the internet works. So I felt intense pressure to lower our prices, but we wanted to keep paying our teachers. So what we decided to do was instead of for a product that in some ways is inferior, right? It's like not in person. So the insight we got was that instead of lowering prices or trying to hold on to this price point, we would add value. So what we did is we started to create all these drop-in classes, like a gym style class, group classes, and anybody who is taking our lessons for free, they could come to as many of these ancillary supplementary classes as they wanted. And what we saw is that we have, you know, it's kind of like a gym. We have some students, they're like, one private lesson is fine for me. That's enough. And I've got a New York City instructor and I've got the quality and it's worth it. But we now have students from around the world who are showing up for 5, 6, 7 classes a week. And so they're getting incredible value and they're getting to know each other. So we have our student open mics, we have our community showcases. But we also have these classes and, you know, they get to know different teachers. So I jump in a class, the teacher recognizes me, I recognize somebody else, another student. And also we now have something that, instead of trying to justify the value, we actually have something that's like worth so, yes, we're still high priced, but we're offering something that is, that far exceeds in value the price. So that's what we ended up doing. It took us like 6 months of trial and error to kind of get to that point. But that has legs, and we're gonna keep doing it. We'll never go back to being only a New York City based business. We're always gonna be worldwide, and we're gonna still have our spiritual home in New York City.
Yeah. Wow. That's just such a great story about how to experiment, see what happens, try. A lot of times entrepreneurs, and we have to experiment. There's no, I always say there's like no silver bullet in what works. Like I can tell you what I think may work, but until you try it, like anything, until you put it out in the world and see what happens, you have no idea. And anyone that says they've got the system and the process or whatever that works for everything is, I mean, they're a little delusional and probably lying to themselves, but there are frameworks and form to everything.
So yeah.
I'm sure your teaching methodology has got a framework.
Yep.
You found this community, you know, you've been experimenting, you know what works, but overall, the overarching thing, your values and your mission, which I really, really think is a great way to anchor this, won't change no matter what the offering is. Wow. So now you're going to be worldwide. Cool.
we are worldwide.
Oh, wow.
I mean, we're 31 states. We've got students in Japan, India, Italy, England, Ireland, Switzerland, Germany. There may be a couple others. But obviously, even as I say that, I'm like, oh, we're not worldwide. I mean, we're barely getting started. There are people out there who want to connect and who we can serve. I did want to mention another part of this that I just think is really important, which it goes back to the values and the team, because our team, like teams all over the world, man, they were rocked. They were having their own issues and problems and shock. So we had at the beginning, we had a weekly meeting to kind of just pull us together. And they were rock stars, and they, it's unbelievable how much of what we do was created by our teachers. Hey, here's a thing called Padlet. You can use it to like organize information. Someone else is like, oh, you know, here's a tool for recording multiple students at the same time. And we're sharing this information, and they really, yeah, our team members were total rock stars, and they were taking so seriously their own responsibility and opportunity to improve what they're doing and share it.
Well, no, that's, wow, that's a great point, because yes, they're rock stars. Yes, they took initiative, but Dan, you're a rock star too for allowing it to happen. Not a lot of entrepreneurs would do that. A lot of times they want the control. And I think that's driven by the mission, vision, and values, and your big idea and your story and your core values. Because this is the thing I think I want everyone to really realize about your particular situation. Traumatic event, catastrophic, worldwide, completely out of your control. You can't do anything about this. Yet the struggle and challenge people rise to the, you know, some people say, oh, they rise to the level of their, you know, they rise to the occasion. No, they've actually fall to their training. Part of that training as an entrepreneur, as a business person, as a team, is this continuing evolution of the mission, vision, and mm-hmm. values, the core mm-hmm. of what you believe in. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a very powerful thing, because when adversity strikes, which it will, This is not the last time a pandemic's going to happen. Sorry for to burst everyone's bubble if they think this is a one and done thing. Not going to happen. What you build now will have legacy and legs for a long time. And I just, it's interesting because you're like not even that high tech a company. You're just a
company,
right? Like a services company that had physical locations, like yoga studio, gym, jujitsu, dancing, gymnastics, singing, like all these things where, you know, I always like, I used to not have this attitude about art in general. I used to like, I was an engineering student. So I'm like, why do I have to take all these stupid, like elective classes, these like liberal arts and social, I'm like, this is ridiculous and stupid. I mean, honestly, I had this baddest attitude about, I'm like, this is going to help me in life. Right. And then I took a class called Jazz in America. And the professor was the actual guy that did the soundtrack to this movie called The Lawnmower Man. I don't remember if anyone knows. This is back in the day. So most of my listeners, if you're younger, probably weren't even born, right? But I remember, like, I'm an engineering student. I don't really want to be in this class. It's, you know, it's like at 11:30 in the afternoon or 11:30 in the morning. And, you know, my day started in engineering school at 7, right? All my other liberal arts colleagues, you know, they rolled out of bed at 11 after drinking all night. I'm like, freaking out, right? But I remember just sitting there at times and he's like, listen to the music. Just like, what is it? How does it make you feel? And I'm like, feel? Mm-hmm. Can I just get this done?
Yeah.
You know, like, when am I going to get my A? And then the thing he made us do is go to a jazz show, right? Never been to a jazz show before. Been to metal concerts, rock concerts. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a heavy metal guy. Like, I like mm-hmm. hard rock, and I'm like all music, but I'm an 80s hair band guy, right? And then it hit me. It hit me that art and culture is the kind of like the spice of life. And I know it's kind of a cliche, but it like kind of makes life worth living. And if art goes away, then that spice and that flavor and that community and that connection. I mean, I remember going to rock shows, I'm sure, or whatever kind of music you are into. You just feel like mm-hmm. everyone's here having fun. You're like, I'm a Maiden fan too. You know what I mean? And the same with like your students. I just think this is so powerful and so overlooked that we need to be more well-rounded as a society. And that starts with the arts. And there's a huge place for it.
Yeah. I think, I mean, I agree. And there's a lot there. One is art expresses the inexpressible. And when you know how to play guitar, you can pick it up and you're feeling something that you can't even say, but you can express it. You can get it out. You can work it out as you play guitar. And it's the same thing with music. One of our teachers, Lenny Molotov, says the job of a musician is to express feelings for other people. Like, yeah, this is how I feel. This says something that can't even be comprehended, who I am and where I am in the universe. But another aspect of music, in particular, art and music, that I think is really important and that I believe in and that I believe connects to what we're trying to do, that we try to do physically in New York City and that we're trying to do now virtually. I grew up Mormon on a farm in Idaho. I hit New York City and I was like, wow, man, this is where I want to be. I still look up and I'm like, wow, those buildings are tall. Yeah. Those are tall buildings.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was surrounded by people who looked different than me. They sounded different than me. They spoke different languages. They had different points of view. They had grown up in different places. And man, I loved it. I wanted to be in it. I wanted it to be in me. And for me, one of the ways I did that, when I hit New York City and I was playing in bands, the fact that I could play guitar and bass, actually, that helped a lot. Because even if you're, I don't know if you know this, if you're a mediocre bass player, you can probably play in more bands than if you're an incredible guitar player.
Yeah, well, there's always those memes that I always see that are like, you know, they have all like singer got all the women, you know, guitarist got some of the women, you know, drummer none of the women, and then, you know, bassist is like who? Huh?
Yeah.
Got their bass, right?
There is always a desperate need for a bass player who can sing. I mean, if you're a bass player who can sing, even if you're not that great of a bass player, you have a chance. So but music led me to all these different rooms and all these different groups of people and clubs and neighborhoods, and it just opened up New York City to me in a way. And right now in America, there's so much polarization. There's so much fear and loathing of other people. And people want to connect. They really want to connect. And when I play my guitar, I'm hearing six different strings making different notes that sound good together. And when I'm in a band, or if I'm in a class with students from around the world, I'm literally making music. I'm literally coming together with people. And I just think it's a really needed, and it doesn't matter that you know, we're from different places or from different political parties or whatever. We can come together. We have a metal class. If you like metal, you can come to the metal class and learn metal, right?
Don't tempt me.
we have the jazz class, we have the guitar class. It's for everybody to come to and make music together. So part of what I hope that we're doing is being, you know, people all across the world are doing this. They're trying to make bridges, but we explicitly are trying to do that. We're trying to make a place where people can come together for music, to just make some music together.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've had Johnny Crowder on the show. He's the singer for the metal band Prison. He also happens to be the CEO of Cope Notes, which is about mental health and everything. And I remember, you know, he is a rock singer, like tattooed and buffed, and like he's just got the kit. I mean, like, he's a rock star, right? And we're just sitting there talking about stuff, you know. And you know, we share kind of this love of metal, right? Like, I grew up in the 80s, 70s and 80s, so like, you know, I'm kind of a metalhead. And he was just like, well, you know, one of the things that when he was raising money for his company, he was worried that, you know, people were like, well, you can't be a rock singer anymore, you got to run your company. And he's just like, that's the dumbest idea ever. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? He's like, the kids I'm trying to reach are at every one of my metal shows. He's like, if you're listening to Prison, you probably've got some challenges mentally and you're trying to find a community that understand you. This was the thing that I was like so blown away, because he's like I don't know how heavy it is. I don't even know what he called thrash metal or like hardcore metal. And, you know, they'll play with bands that are pretty dark and hardcore. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, yeah, you can always tell a prison fan. So they're the ones helping people up as they get smashed in the pit. Mm-hmm. And if you've never been in a mosh pit, then you probably don't know what I'm talking about. Look it up on YouTube. But it's
powerful. I've been in a few mosh pits.
Yeah, of course. I mean,
they can get scary when you go down and you're in the bottom of the mosh pit. It goes from fun to scary really fast,
real quick. And hopefully you got your buddies that are going to pull you up. But community is just so important, and we're so losing that with this, like you said, this divide. I mean, I think at the end of the day, we all just kind of want to have a good life and have friends and have our family taken care of and, you know, enjoy the world and not have to worry about stuff, you know? And you're right. I think we need to start pulling together. I mean, also had Chris Terry on. I don't know if you know who Chris Terry is. He's he's the founder of Gen Z Media, but he's also a jazz bass player. And so it was interesting talking to him because, of course, he plays in bands and, you know, everything. But then he formed Gen Z Media, and Gen Z Media is all about telling stories to Gen Z. Great podcast that, you know, my fiance's daughter and I and the whole family listen to, because it's just so, like, he does a great job. But the music in there, I'm like, well, what makes you guys different? And he's like, just listen to the music. Uh-huh. And I'm like, yeah, like that feel. If I can feel it when there's tension, because the, mm-hmm. the music, right? So what do you think is gonna happen now? I mean, we're gonna pull out of this pandemic eventually. I think people are gonna have, I mean, honestly, I think there's gonna be some collective trauma to deal with. I mm-hmm. you can already feel it and see it. What do you think is gonna happen? How do you think that you're going to kind of fill this void? And then, And I mean, when do you think you're going to reopen your physical location? I guess that may, let's start there.
May 19th.
Oh, okay. May 19th. Heard it here first.
Yeah. We're going to do a slow rollout, to our, we've got our remaining locations are in Midtown and Queens. Oh, and I do want to shout out our Queens landlord. Awesome, awesome family. Who worked with us on the rent as part of this. We're back to paying full rent to everybody, but that's just an example of how we really were all in this together.
That's beautiful.
And we're not going to be in a super rush. We're going to gradually build. We're not requiring our teachers to come back. We're doing it on a volunteer basis at first. And it's gonna be a little tricky, because many of our teachers have busier schedules than they've ever had, and they're telling me, Dan, you know what? I think I like teaching virtually from my apartment, and I love my setup, and I've got all my guitars and my computer and my mics and my interface. Can I just keep teaching from my apartment? And the answer is, well, we certainly have enough business for them to do that, but we are going to reopen physically as well. So there's a lot to sort out. We also, there's these voids in these neighborhoods that we closed in. So for our personal story, what I envision for us is I think we're going to keep going gangbusters on online. We're going to reopen these two locations and build them up. And I think people are going to be very excited. Like our summer camp right now, we already have tons and tons of kids signed up for our summer camp. There's such a hunger to come back and connect physically. But I still don't know what the long-term physical brick and mortar reality is for us. And I know from talking to other people in my kind of business that a lot of people are in that space. They're not really sure what to do. But what do I think is going to happen? Jari, I think humans are going to keep being human. I'm no expert, but I think human beings are going to keep, they're going to keep wanting to find the greatness within themselves. They're going to keep wanting to connect with other people. Unfortunately, they're going to keep having tribal instincts of fear. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I feel pretty optimistic. I feel like people are coming out of this with a real hunger. I mean, all of us have had a reality check on what our lives are like. And you've probably done the same thing. I feel it in myself. I'm like, wait a minute. I don't want to go back to the same life I had. I was taking all of these things for granted that I don't want to take for granted anymore. And we're doing that as a society, and we're doing that as individuals. So I think for people like you, who, you know, you're teaching people how to be more effective entrepreneurs. I think for people like me who are teaching people how to practice and be more effective, in guitar, but also just in practicing anything. I think our future is pretty bright, because I think people are coming out of this and they want a richer life for themselves, and they want to be more connected to other people.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, the original premise for this show, I started this show, this podcast, the first episode launched the day we were sheltered in place in San Francisco, March 16th, 2020. March 16th also happens to be my mom's birthday. So the original premise for this show was I was going to do every interview live. I was literally going to have a recorder, and I was going to go like face to face, like we're having coffee. I always like to say, just imagine we're having coffee at a cafe. I did like three of those, and then pre-recorded a bunch, and then the world just completely shut down. And again, for a podcast, for me, it's not that big a deal, right? This isn't my main gig, right? I do this, like I think I told you before, I do this to practice talking to people, because I'm very bad at it. I'm trying to, like, you know, practice. And I love your metaphor of practice. Like, I think practice is at the heart of getting of greatness, because a lot of the world is luck. So as an entrepreneur, it's lucky. You know, you're going to get a book deal, it's luck. You're going to get a record contract, it's luck. Mm-hmm. But the more you practice, the more you put yourself out there, the more opportunities you take advantage of, the luckier you get. But mm-hmm. it all boils down to, what can I control?
Yeah.
I could control my discipline to practice my craft.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think that's the key to success, at least the people that I've talked to. So in terms of your approach to guitar and teaching guitar, I know you've got a songbook coming out of the 40 greatest songs to practice to on guitar. What is it about your method, and what have you like figured out about how to get that practice discipline, that practice habit? Because again, you know, full confession, I want to learn. I'm trying to figure out, like, I'm pretty disciplined. It's just, it scares me, to be honest.
Yeah.
Music, haven't been that musically inclined in my life. And I know a lot of people are in the same boat. My dad used to play guitar when we were kids. We would sing like Christmas carols for grandma, you know, poorly, by the way. I mean, like, I have a voice. You know, I've got the late night FM DJ voice. I don't have the, you know, I'm not Pavarotti but what is it about your method that gets that practice habit going?
Yeah. We talk about practice a lot with our team. There's kind of a couple streams of inspiration in my learning. One is, I'm a giant John Wooden fan. And we've done a couple book groups, based around, books about him or by him. One of my favorite books is You Haven't Taught Until They Have Learned, which I just feel like it's the ultimate thing. Are you a guitar teacher? Well, I don't know. Did they learn anything? Kind of on, also on the sports side, I did a lot of martial arts. It sounds like you did too. And I did, college sports. So a lot of that stuff, has influenced how I think about practice. And then also I got really into, I read Malcolm Gladwell's, book Outliers, and the 10,000 hour rule. Now that may have been a little bit of a simplification of how learning works, but like a lot of other people, that put me on this whole path to study, you know, Andreas Ericsson, deliberate practice, how the brain works, The Shallows by Nicholas Carr. I don't know if you've read that.
No, I haven't.
Such a, you know, so I got super interested in what actually happens inside the body when you learn something. So, now with those kinds of, with those two things in mind, number one is like the practical application from sports of how you practice and how you coach. And then also the scientific knowledge of how learning actually happens in the brain. Let me take a step back. When you teach guitar, you're not teaching guitar, you're teaching people. That's our first thing that we say all the time. You don't teach guitar, you teach people. You don't teach guitar, you teach people. What do people need to learn? They come to us with a lot of motivation. They also come to us with a lot of fear. The first thing they need is faith. They need to actually believe that they can learn. And then they need a very, very clear step-by-step path that works if they follow it. But then they need to stay on that path. They need to be supported in their practice. One of the things we realize is as important as teaching guitar technique is, we need to teach practice. So I wrote a book, and some of the articles in it are from other members of our team, called the Ultimate Guitar Workbook, and it's 20 chapters on different aspects of practice. What do we teach? The first thing we teach is that when you practice, you're literally changing the wiring of your brain.
Wow.
So, and this applies to guitar, but it applies to anything. You're changing the wiring of the brain. How do you change the wiring of your brain? You have to repeat things, but you have to repeat them correctly. And there's a, what we call the sweet spot is the point at which the learning in your brain happens the fastest, when you're actually building neuron connections and changing the structure of your brain the fastest. And the sweet spot works out. What we teach is, we say, put your student in a place where they're 80% successful when they're practicing as hard as they can. So our job as a coach, paying very close attention to our student, becomes keeping our, you know, giving our students a path, and the background and the warm up, and then dropping them into this workout where we're keeping them in this place where they can do it, but it's hard. It's challenging, but they can do it. And then we have to build very step by step, these skills up step by step. And it's crazy. So like here's a simple example that anyone could try at home. You're trying to learn a song. See if you can play a piece of it four times in a row. If you can play it four times in a row, that's 80% success. Great. If you can do it, figure out a way to make it tougher. A great way is a metronome. Play it a little faster. If you can't do it four times in a row, it's too hard. You have no business practicing at that level. And what we see, our students tend to fall into, naturally, they fall into one of two camps. Either they're playing the same, they come in and they're like, I've been playing guitar for 20 years and I've never made any progress. Well, what have you been doing? I've been playing the same song, right? They're not challenging themselves at all. This happens all the time. On the flip side, and more common, is what I call teenage heavy metal guitarist syndrome. They're like, oh, I'm going to play this. I'm going to play this.
Power chord.
Yeah. Iron Maiden riff or whatever.
That's me.
Yeah. And they play it and they make a mistake, and then they play it again and they make a mistake. And they're like, maybe if I play it faster, it'll be better. And they play it and they make a mistake, and they lock in incorrect information to their brain. And really, really, in my experience, it turns out that people actually usually are practicing things at too difficult of a level. And then they're like, I suck. This isn't working, right? So you want to put them, it's our job as a teacher. You got to make your students successful. So you got to break it down, give them something that's challenging for where they're at, that they can totally rock. So at the beginning, that might be, hey, which finger is your first finger? I'm going to show you, this is your first finger. Now show me, which finger is your first finger? And they show you their first finger. Hey, they just got a success. They're on their way, right? Too many coaches, too many teachers set their students up to fail. So you gotta make them successful. You gotta make them successful. You gotta give them the chance to be successful, but don't make it easy. And the amazing thing is, if you keep your students in this sweet spot, and if you teach them to practice in that sweet spot, it seems like you're going slower, But oh my gosh, people learn so fast.
Oh, I agree. I agree. I think this is a great methodology for leadership and, you know, developing your employees and really like when you challenge someone to do work. Like a lot of times, this is what happens with entrepreneur, engineer, whatever. They'll assign a task to someone.
Yeah.
And that task is literally that person either won't admit they can't do it, or it's too hard, or they're overwhelmed. And then they do it incorrectly. And then there's this huge, like, they're not set up for success. Like, I love what you said. You need to set them up for success. And I agree with you that that appears slower, but this stuff seems to me to be asymmetric, right? And this is the same with jujitsu and sports. And this is why, like, even in jujitsu, like, we practice these moves and positions and, like, look, just make sure you get this right. If you can't do this, we're not even gonna go down in the complicated. So let's just do the fundamentals. But as the things layer on, this muscle memory, which is important, muscle memory is also for leadership and entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same exact thing. And I love you bringing up John Wooden, because I think there is a lot of value in studying coaches at the sports level and what they do and how that can be applied.
Yeah.
Now, of course, it's not completely applicable to lots of things, but the general, like, form and flavor of it all, it's human motivation and making sure that you're motivating people to succeed.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's so powerful. I wish that's a great, great lesson to have and thing. And so my last question that I'm working on, it's an experiment is, what advice would you give the next generation of entrepreneurs coming up?
I would say a couple things. First of all, I really, really believe, so sometimes people say, hey, Dan, why are you a for-profit company? Why don't you make a nonprofit? If you're mission-driven, if you're values-based, if you want to build community, if you want to make people stronger, why don't you do a nonprofit? I believe so strongly that we can make our own lives better and other people's lives better through businesses. And it doesn't matter if it's a local business, an internet business. So one thing that I was a little messed up in my head at first was I was like, wait a minute, is it bad for me to make money? Wait, but I have really come to a place where I believe I'm bringing immense value to the world through business. So the first thing I'd say is listen, the world needs you. The world needs you to start a business. The world needs you to solve problems. We've got lots of problems. You need to solve them. And you need to create that opportunity for yourself, and you need to create jobs and learning for other people, and you need to solve problems for people. So the first thing I'd say is yeah, man, do it. The world needs you. And then the second thing I'd say is, so I teach guitar, and we have a very unique guitar method. That is, I would say it's maybe, I don't know, people have been teaching guitar for a long time. Our method is, realistically, is it 2% different? Is it 5% different than other guitar methods? But that's enough. It's revolutionary, right? Everything else, someone else has already thought about and is expert on. So we run Scrum. We don't need to make up how to run projects. Someone else already did that. We run the entrepreneurial operating system for our meeting rhythms and our accountability chart. We don't need to make up how to do that. The first book I read was when I started my business was Guerrilla Marketing by J. Conrad Levinson. There's marketing books out there. There's people who have devoted their lives to figuring out how to do this. Don't figure everything out on your own. You've got your own special sauce. You're your own special person, and everything else, just go find out how someone else did it and do it exactly the way they say until you've done it enough to make a change. So those are the two pieces of advice I'd give is do it, get started. The world needs you. And also just keep your special stuff to your special stuff and just do what works for everything else.
Wow. Well, that's a great place to end. And I really appreciate you being open about the struggles and challenges you've had. Good luck with New York City Guitar School, now nationwide, worldwide, in fact.
Yeah.
And I am, you know,
you need to hold me accountable to this because I really want to learn. So I need to meditate on it, but I might be reaching out to figure out how to do that. Cause I like that methodology that you said, you know, success breeds more success.
Yeah.
You don't have to show how smart you are because someone can't do something you showed them how to do. Like, be a leader.
Yeah.
Pull that together. So Dan, thanks a lot. Stay safe and good luck opening next month.
Thank you very much, Jari. It's been an honor and a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for doing this podcast and for inviting me and allowing me to be on it. I hope it brings value to your listeners and have an awesome day. Take care.
Thanks. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks again, Dan, for being on the show. I learned a ton, and I think you kind of inspired me to want to pick up the guitar. So here, as promised, are some actionable insights that I learned from Dan. Dan struggled at first with whether his business should be a nonprofit or not. He since adopted the belief that he can change people's lives through businesses, and indeed, it's one of the best ways to affect change in the world. Find your sweet spot. Focus your energy on what you uniquely have to offer and lean on others' expertise for the rest, whether it's implementing a project management system or a marketing strategy. Someone has learned how to do it effectively. You can focus on your own unique offerings and leverage what they've done. Be prepared. Dan's farsightedness in having savings and then acting fast when he saw a crisis coming helped him more efficiently pivot. Even while the business was still struggling, they were still able to come back strong in a different kind of form and enable them to grow offerings to lessons from students to students all over the world. So this is an excellent, excellent example of a pretty good pivot, right? And then the last one I like the most is, if you want to be in a band, Dan suggests being a bass player, especially if you can sing. Apparently, those are in high demand. So thanks again, Dan, for being on the show. And there you are. Actionable insights you can take action on, well, right now. Thanks again for listening. Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it. My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also join my email list by visiting theentrepreneurethos.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur, and frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at TheDailyMBA, and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about on this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.